Introducing QuiltBeam, the game changer in simplifying parts procurement. Tired of endless part searches? Dive into QuiltBeam's extensive inventory, making it easy to find what you need. Can't find a specific part? No worries, QuiltBeam's team of experts is on standby, ready to provide you with the quote quickly. Engineers and procurement buyers, let QuiltBeam streamline your search, freeing you up for more significant tasks. Explore QuiltBeam now by visiting us at quiltbeam.com. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another live Automation Ladies episode, except this time we have a panel discussion. And one member of our panel is currently not here, which is Allie. I know it's weird because she's usually a co-host, but when we were putting together the panel for this topic, which is the state of smart manufacturing, I thought that Allie would actually be great as a panelist rather than a co-presenter. And then it turns out that she's out on a customer site today and she's hoping to join us. But if she doesn't, then at least we have the three of us here, I think will make for a great discussion. But I would absolutely encourage everybody, if you're here, if you've managed to make this live, please interact with us in the comments, ask questions, answer the questions if you have any insights. We have a couple people from Walkwell in the comments as well that should be able to answer questions or point you to resources if you want to know where you can find things. We'll try to throw up your questions on the screen as well. But welcome. If you haven't been to a live Automation Ladies event before, my name is Nikki Gonzalez. I am one of two hosts of the podcast Automation Ladies, which is also a live series and a whole bunch of other things that we are interested in. And my co-host Allie G, or Alicia Gilpin, is the owner of Process and Controls Engineering LLC, a systems integrator in the Pacific Northwest. And she has been working with, Rockwell Control Systems in airports and landfills and food and beverage applications for many, many years. And a lot of the topics touched on in this report are things that she deals with on a day-to-day basis. And so I wanted to get her insight. And then we have Andy Stump from Rockwell Automation. We obviously want to get their input. They put out the report. They work in this, area. They're the largest automation-only specific technology company in the world, as we probably all know. And I want to give a big shout out and a thank you to them for sponsoring this episode, getting this research to us, and being willing to have the candid conversations that we know we have here on Automation Ladies. And then we have Victoria from Ireland. I will refrain from trying to pronounce the rest of her name because I get it wrong, although I'm practicing my Portuguese pronunciation. We actually recorded an episode with her a couple of weeks ago, which has not aired on Automation Ladies yet. But if you're interested in hearing more about her story, please stay tuned. We will have an episode out with her story, which is amazing. I immediately, when I knew that I was going to be organizing this panel, wanted to get her on here because she did mention during our last talk that they were in the beginning stages of implementing some more connected smart factory industry 4.0 stuff at her facility. She works for Magna International, which, if you don't know, is an automotive supplier, very well known international with many, many plants. But yeah, so her, she's in more of the maintenance and factory floor controls engineering, mechatronics kind of areas. And I thought it would be great to get her perspective on some of these high level topics as we talk about the state of smart manufacturing in 2024. So with that, welcome everyone. And I would like to pass it over to Andy to maybe give a quick introduction, Andy, of who you are and what you've been working on.
Yeah, thanks, Nikki. And happy to be part of the discussion today. The report from Smart Manufacturing, this is our ninth annual report that came out from Rockwell Automation. And we sample over, I think, around 1,500 or more companies globally across all regions, many different countries, industries, and talk to them about what matters most to them in smart manufacturing, the technologies, the challenges, the opportunities that exist globally as we look at this space. And, it's great to compile that data and get good insight to the things that are happening across the globe. And it's really some unique insights to the daily lives of everybody that deals with manufacturing and everyone's tasked with the challenges and optimization that goes along with that.
Very cool. I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot more content referencing this report in the days ahead. It just got released 2 days ago. There should be a link to it for everyone in the comments to the press release that includes the link to actually download the full report. And then as part of the summary that will go with this episode, we'll probably be putting out some of our own, you know, recaps or a blog post or something summarizing our take from the report. Of course, there's quite a lot of information in there, so we're not going to cover it all, but we'll touch on some of the main points. Andy, can you also just give us just a short little background of like maybe your career and how you got to be in this position where you're now, you know, going around talking about all these trends with everyone?
Yeah, would love to. So I'm a longtime Rockwell employee, over 25 years of experience at Rockwell and in manufacturing. I started my career in project delivery. So I have been in the plants delivering automation control systems, you know, using the products and the technologies that make all of this come together for the customers. And a lot of different roles throughout my career, from services into our business unit. I led a lot of our design software, kind of future design software implementation, some of the new offerings coming onto the market right now. And now I'm in a role in our sales and marketing organization, focused around business development to key strategic initiatives for the company. You know, understanding how technology and products come together with people to solve problems that manufacturers have. So that's what brings me to today and being able to talk about history, background, and all the things that go into manufacturing.
Very cool. So yeah, you probably get kind of a glimpse into a lot of the forefront projects, right? Where they're strategic, they're forward-looking, they're with customers that are on the kind of the cutting edge of implementing these things, right?
Yeah, most definitely. These are the boardroom discussions that executives are having about where are their companies going? What are the impacts to their business? How does technology play into that? I think it's pretty clear everyone needs to do more with less, right?
Yeah.
Optimization, quality are forefront of mind for everyone. So how do we help apply technology to do that and help achieve that?
Very cool. Victoria, can you give us a little background on yourself as well, since we haven't released the episode where we get all the full story?
Sure, no problem. So as you said, Victoria Oliveira from Ireland, originally from Brazil. I'm a mechatronic engineer with a few postgrads that you guys will learn about in the episode. But currently I work for Magna International on our plant here in Ireland. I'm located in the maintenance department, but I also work as the champion for Industry 4.0 and also sustainability in our facility. So basically, I deal with all the projects that will englobe smart manufacturing and also become more green to the environment.
Yeah, that's actually something that's touched on in the report, highlighted quite a bit, is the increased formalization of plans for ESG and things like that. So I think if I read it correctly, 98% of the 1,500 manufacturers surveyed actually have a sustainability or ESG policy in place, but about half of them have actually gotten to formalize company-wide policy. So this is clearly an area where you are not alone in developing these and formalizing the policies across. Can you tell us what your plant specifically makes?
In our plant, we have three plants in one. We do tooling, We do production, and also assembly. So we have nearly three factories in one. So When we talk about becoming a smart factory, we are also developing it for the three plants and also trying to become more sustainable in the three plants at the same time.
And so in that assembly factory, what kind of, I know there are components, right? Or
they are body parts.
Body parts? Okay.
Yeah, body parts. So we assemble a few body parts in the assembly building. On the production, we do press the parts. And in the tooling, we make the tools for the presses, not only for our own facility, but also to export to other facilities.
Oh, very cool. And so it looks like in the report as well, if we look at the distribution of the types of manufacturing companies that have answered this report, the largest share, 25%, is high-tech electronics and semiconductor, which is obviously a huge booming area right now, too, as well as in there's a lot of new plants being built in this area. And then 12%, the second group that's represented, is automotive, tire, EV, and battery. So that's obviously where you fall with Magna, and then your previous experience as well, being in the tire industry with Bridgestone, right?
Exactly.
And then 12% are metals and metal forming, and then 10% or so are CPG manufacturing businesses. So this is, capturing a good number of different industries. And I want to just encourage everybody, if you're here, say hi in the chat, please tell us where you're coming from, where you're, you know, tuning in from. And I guess now I'm interested, you know, like, what industry area are you in? If you're in a manufacturing plant, you know, what are you making or what industry are you in? Just to kind of see what we have, lots and lots of different types of people in our community. And if you let us know, you know, if there's particular industries that we see a lot of people are from, then maybe we can tailor what we say and what we talk about here to you guys as well. So I would like to start by presenting a stat here. So the key results of this, and I did take a look at the 2023 report a little bit as we were getting started for this. The percentage of people that are using or evaluating smart manufacturing technology is now at 95% versus 84% last year. So that's a 9% increase year over year. Is that a lot compared to the increase in the previous years, Andy? Or is that kind of how it's ticking up year by year? Yeah, I mean, we can't go up 10% again next year because we're already at 95 now.
Right. Yeah, it's been on the steady rise. I think it's just the, you know, historically manufacturing somewhat from embracing new technologies has been slow over the years. And I think over the last, you know, several years coming out of post-pandemic, we're seeing manufacturers understand that there's a race. There's a race to apply technology to get benefit. Many of them no longer have the luxury of kind of, you know, lagging and seeing how technology plays out because they miss such opportunity. And I think that's where we're seeing kind of that hockey stick happening, where we are seeing, you know, 11% growth from a few years ago with the adoption of smart technologies, applying technology to do that. So it is a race. It is a race to find the right value. And one of the things we hear loud and clear from a lot of the respondents in the report is it's not just about applying technology for sake of technology, right? It's easy to get caught up in that cycle of technology, but it's using it for the right purposes. You know, one of the key number one topics with applying technology is quality. It remains quality. In manufacturing, those that produce efficient and with high quality are going to win. And everyone's looking for applying the right technology to do that.
Yeah. And I guess in the last few years too, we've had just in the last couple of years, a lot of quality recalls going on. And I mean, Boeing, I hate to, you know, rag on them as an example, but I just recently watched a 30-minute segment from This Week Tonight, I think it is, with John Oliver, that kind of summarized the case of when they went through the merger and stopped manufacturing things themselves and went out to, you know, kind of this much, much more complicated supply chain. And it introduced a whole host of factors that they, you know, were kind of out of their control, right, based on the way that they had outsourced this. But, you know, I think we've seen over the last decade or two a decrease in quality in some things. And, you know, recalls are very expensive, not even to talk about the cost to, you know, human lives, our environment, all kinds of things, right? And quality is something that with automation should go up over other methods. And as much as, you know, I think sometimes automation can make things worse if they're applied to processes that are not well thought out or they're not well managed. And it's really the people that manage the automation and that are involved in all of those steps that we can't automate the people out. We're never going to do that. But yeah, so that interplay between people and processes and technologies, is that something that we've just kind of struggled with over the, you know, last few years trying to integrate? Maybe people are running ahead with technology without having a total integrated, you know, well thought out process for change management, people feeling responsible. Another thing I heard in that was that people at the plants did not know their role in quality and what to report to who when quality issues were happening. That seems like more of a people problem than a technology problem to me. Can you guys comment on that? I guess from your experience, what you've seen or how we can, you know, tackle these things better to actually not just use automation to cut cost, but right, to increase quality, right? And increase engagement of workers in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, an interesting statistic, 94% of the people that responded through the Smart Manufacturing Survey, they expect to grow their workforce as a result of applying automation and applying technology. To your point, it's not just about replacing people. It's about allocating people, which are in a limited supply. Right. Yeah. Skilled workforce are limited. that's a throttle to you know, doing more? And how do we, you know, use people with the right skills to embrace the technology to help them? And that's where people and change management are so very, very important. You commented about, you know, it changes how sometimes people do their jobs. And you have to kind of put the technology and the changes lockstep hand in hand with the people and how they do their jobs and make sure that it is a change management evolution, right? People evolve, their roles change, they take on different tasks as a result of applying technology. And that is something that can't be forgotten in the digital transformation, for sure. Applying technology comes hand in hand with change management of the people and that are using it and applying it.
Yeah. Vittoria, is that something that you're seeing in your experience? Is people kind of, you know, evolving their positions as the technology comes in?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, what I see is that it's mostly a people and training problem. Some people would be afraid of moving from the areas and evolving the skills towards a more technological work. So what we see, what I've seen so far, are people that are very skilled in their jobs, but they are a bit afraid of technology, that technology maybe would be taking their jobs while technology is there to help them to evolve as well. So I think the main thing here is to get the owners of the technology to show that the technology is there to help, not to remove them.
Yeah. And in my experience, so I used to be involved in digital transformation of supply chains, particularly in the CPG and the retail area. And we were basically coming in at this company saying, hey, a lot of the manual processes that you do today, we can automate them. And a lot of, in some cases, the executives would be, okay, let's, you know, implement all of this stuff and then we'll roll it out to people and show them the parts of their job. And we were like, no, wait. We would like to have a workshop first with everybody whose job this is going to touch so that we can show them A, how their job will evolve but for the better, and B, how them learning those skills actually makes them more marketable in the future, whether it's for internal roles, their roles changing within the organization or the opportunities for advancement, but also making them understand that, hey, you know, in the job market landscape, having evolved your skills and worked with this technology actually makes you a more marketable person outside of this position. Because let's face it, we all know today that, you know, most people, not all people work at the same place their entire career. Not everybody has the Andy's story of, you know, being at Rockwell for over 20 years, which I have heard from so many people from Rockwell that have been there that long. And it is a testament to great companies that keep people around that long. But, you know,
and it's also a trend. And it's also a trend for those new generations. People don't really want to stay in the same place for that long anymore because they want to explore and know more and see more. So I think it's also a trend for the future.
That's true. I don't know many young people that like the idea of sitting, you know, getting into one job and then just doing that for the rest of their career and not learning. And I think we've also kind of, you know, learned from our parents' generation that it isn't guaranteed. And when you have 30 years of 1 year experience repeated, you're not a very marketable candidate for anything. And things are changing very fast now, whether it's, you know, jobs or technology or anything else. And I want to pull up a comment here. So we have a couple of people chime in. Thanks, Scott Chapman. He's in Texas, a little bit south of me here. Appreciate you joining, Scott. He's actually going to be one of the trainers and speakers at our upcoming event, OT SCADAcon, here in Houston. I hope some people can join us for that. And we have Juan Pino saying hi as well from the Sunshine State in Florida. And I want to throw up a larger comment from Juan. He says, for a while now, technology has been advancing faster than our ability to adjust and learn in the workforce. Recently, there's been a movement to create user interfaces that are more intuitive for employees that don't have a programming background. That's a great point. So are we starting to adapt the technology to make it easier for adoption, right? And the frontline worker is really now the user of this technology. I think there's actually a stat in here that, Andy, what was it that there's a big percentage of manufacturers now that are 81% plan to be using wearable technology as well by the end of this year. So how are the user interfaces changing to accommodate the workforce.
Yeah, simplification is key in all of this, right? If a great technology is hard to use, it impedes what you're trying to achieve, you know, in your daily job. You know, in our consumer lives, we experience this every day. If something's hard to use, we move on to the next thing that's easier to use. That's just human nature. And manufacturing technology is no different. That's, I think, where we've seen, you know, such a change with technologies like AI, right? Generative AI has now become mainstream, and now everyone can kind of see how it can add value, right? Introduction of ChatGPT makes it more visible as what you can do with it, which then in manufacturing, you can see and apply it to your daily role for that. So simplification, I agree with that comment, is so very, very important. That's been a focus at Rockwell Automation as we introduce new products into the market. Some of our new analytics offerings, the focus has been on simplification for OT. Right? How do integrators and users embrace the technology? And then the operators and maintenance staff that use them for their job are so, so much more important to that. And I think the training, the technology go hand in hand. I know the comment from Juan was around, you know, technology has been changing faster and outpacing people's ability to upskill to embrace that. So we have to recognize that's not going to slow down. And offerings that come into manufacturing by being simpler to use mean that there's less training, less upskilling that has to happen because they're intuitive to use in their daily jobs.
Yeah. Vittoria, do you have a perspective on the usability of technology kind of over the span of your career? What you've seen?
Yes, I do have. I have noticed from the past years that people are actually getting more involved on technology by the daily basis, right? By using social media, even. There are new social media every day. Every day there is new platforms like TikTok, Instagram. They even evolve themselves. So yeah. I see that even people that are not normally used to use technology, they are being forced by the daily basis to access them too. So what I have tried to do in my facilities, try to introduce technology to those people that normally have a bit more difficulty with the literacy in technology and facilitate and make things simple for them. We are going paperless, for example. So we are using digital systems to do documentations for preventives in maintenance. So what I try to do is to get, for example, a form that would have 100 lines for them to give some sort of explanation on the task and then give numbers and everything to a simple tick, yes, no, and just a small box with, I don't know, if they have to measure temperature or something, a gauge, they can just put that. And then the system will classify it. Like, this is good, this is not good, you need to give me more information, or no, this information is enough. Because using the technology can make things simple, faster, and also more productive. And I think this is probably the road that we really want to get to.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. A static form really just it can only statically ask those questions, whereas something digital and dynamic, you can, you know, there's can be dependencies there. So yes. Maybe somebody actually only needs to answer 5 of the 100 questions if exactly. One of the 5, you know, completes the task. Very interesting. Yeah. So another, I guess one of the main things from the takeaways was that generative AI is the number one new technology that manufacturers are considering. And I was really surprised to see how many are planning to implement it this year.
83%.
That's a large number
of manufacturers that are actively looking to apply the technology. And that shows it is mainstream. It's here. People are finding value. And finding the right projects to apply it on, I think, is key here. You know, as we said in the beginning, technology for sake of technology doesn't create value. Finding the right opportunities to apply it, leveraging the right partners with the right products that make it simple to use to deliver that value is going to be the big differentiator, right? That's who's going to come out ahead overall.
Yeah. You think because we've been trying to do this for so long, I feel like smart manufacturing and Industry 4.0 obviously has been a topic for I don't know, at least 10 years now. I don't know when when we first started saying this kind of stuff, but in the last few years, when it first kind of was being talked about, I was very interested. And then I was like, oh, actually, this is all like really high level stuff that only huge companies that are building brand new plants can actually implement. For the rest of us, we're too stuck in fixing problems, putting out fires, whatever, because it's just a big, hairy, complex thing to implement. Things that are seamlessly connected. Also, just aside, ChatGPT loves to say the word seamless. Seamless integration is one of its favorite things. And we all laugh. All of us integrators laugh when we hear the word seamless integration. We all want to say
that means people doing something great behind the scenes. That's what that means.
Yes.
Actually, there's a whole lot of seams in there, guys. We got to stitch things together correctly. But is it maybe that we've been thinking about this problem for so long, trying to figure out how we actually get it done, and then all of a sudden, right on the scene last year, comes this new thing that really seems promising to complete all the use cases we've been trying to cobble together for a long time? That maybe this new technology is something that, not in and of itself, all of a sudden makes it a revolution, but it's that last little bit, this last little layer that we kind of needed to feel like we can stitch these things together somehow.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that started when we start talking about cloud technology and software as a service. That brings the value proposition is that it brings simplification to manufacturing. Setting up complex systems, maintaining complex systems, dealing with lifecycle management, having the ability to scale up and scale down, those value propositions coupled then with technology like AI that can run in the cloud or at the edge, that seems to be the magic sauce to bring value. And, cloud and as a service topics that may have been taboo in manufacturing years ago, we're seeing become just pervasive in every day, right? Many industries, financial, healthcare, have all kind of hit that tipping point. Manufacturing has now achieved that same thing. Almost all global of the Fortune 500, all are embracing cloud. It's pushing down to the plant floor in new ways every day. It creates architectures that you have at the control layer, you have at the edge, and embracing cloud and technology is there. I think in the report, cloud and SaaS are the number one value proposition of all respondents. Gen AI was number two this year. It bumped up. That combination is really important to find a way to harness that.
Yeah, it really lowers the barrier to entry as well. Because like in the past, I've said, I've thought about this as like, oh, this is great. This is the, this is the talk of the Fortune 500, like you said. Not the majority of like smaller to medium-sized businesses that I work with or have, been involved with. Although in my last work at Algo, we wanted to bring our supply chain transformation to smaller companies, but we found that there was so much work left to be done at big enterprises that we never ended up touching the SMB level, just because enterprises, while huge, they have so many departments, divisions, areas that it's really taken them time to implement this type of stuff all over the place. And, they struggle with talent just as much as small people do, getting the right people in the right places. And right now there's the shortage of the types of people all the way down from the controls engineer, technician to the cloud architect and the AI people. All of them are in short supply. So definitely. How do we take advantage of all this? I think the cloud is exactly the answer because like you said, Andy, this way also we can have subject matter experts of certain processes handle that. And the rest of us can benefit by tapping into that service.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Good.
I was going to say, and I saw the same thing a few years ago about cloud. We'd always have to offer, okay, it's cloud-based, but if you really want, we can do on-prem. Because there are those companies that just thought, cloud is not safe. I want everything on-premise. If it's in my location, at least it's my safety responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about cybersecurity a little bit.
Right.
On-prem is not, are these manufacturing organizations, are they cybersecurity experts? Is your on-prem data center as secure as, the millions and billions of dollars that the big cloud providers are pouring into their data centers? I don't think that we can all be the experts, right? So how about we work together? And I just recently went to NVIDIA's GTC conference, in which I happily saw during the keynote that Rockwell Automation is partnering with NVIDIA for a lot of the new technology that they're building to make available. So they're building core technology for AI, that those building blocks can be used by partners in their ecosystem. You know, Rockwell and plenty of other companies in our ecosystem were listed on those slides. But what I've seen in my experience, you know, we have the acceleration of hardware compute that has allowed the AI to come into play, because we needed all of those GPUs, all of that bandwidth, all of those chips that the hardware companies were developing to be able to run these models. And we needed the cloud compute to do it too, because nobody can afford to buy, you know, not every company can afford to buy all the compute they need to build these things.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
How are ecosystems kind of playing a big part of this future, Andy?
Yeah, no, that's such a great point. And that's where cloud and software as a service really, you know, are hitting mainstream, because, you know, large organizations, they many times have the budget and the people and the experts to deploy enterprise systems. You know, that barrier to entry, the cost to entry, the skill set, the knowledge to maintain it has been reduced by leveraging technology, cloud, and as a service. And that enables smaller and mid-sized manufacturers to get access to the same power that they're, you know, billion-dollar company, big companies have to work with every day. So it opened it up and made it easier access, lower barriers to entry for that. But to your comment then about cybersecurity, it opens up another set of challenges, kind of peeling back to explore there. And that was one of the interesting things. This year's report, cybersecurity broke into the top five risk category for the first time. And it ranked, I think, third overall is where it sat. And people with cybersecurity, it's a very real topic. It's something that has to be top of mind to mitigate risk. I think if you look, number one skill set that employers are looking for in this next year is cybersecurity. Because they have to mitigate risk of connecting systems, applying technology, but doing it in safe and secure way, so they're not opening themselves up to risk at an enterprise level. So cybersecurity is front and center on everyone's mind. Skills related to that are in small supply right now. It's a great fast-growing skills opportunity for new people entering the market. And, you know, we say quite a bit, one of the key things to mitigate risk in cybersecurity, if you don't have the skills yourself, is to get a partner that does, right? Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to partner with, you know, an integration firm or a company like Rockwell Automation that has hundreds or thousands of individuals that this is what they wake up every day doing to help.
Absolutely. Yeah, there just aren't enough people that know it. And right. So not everybody can have them.
Yeah.
We have to partner up somehow instead of this kind of old school scarcity mentality, right?
Right.
Of, you know, we want to hoard the resources for ourselves.
Right. Take advantage of cloud is, you know, in many respects, the security applied to cloud and as a service many times can be better and is better than systems on site that maybe don't have the right rigor on maintenance and lifecycle management. And I think an interesting combination of technology and cyber is that one of the biggest combinations the manufacturers expect is that artificial intelligence is, I think, like number one or two technology application is in cybersecurity, right? So using the technology to help improve the cybersecurity, which is needed because of the technology, you know, it's kind of come full circle. And it's interesting that that can help alleviate a lot of the challenges and risks by applying AI to cybersecurity.
Vittoria, I know that you, among all of the many different things that you said that you touch at Magna, outside of your, you know, official maintenance role, cybersecurity wasn't one of them, but I bet it's still something that you think about quite a bit. Would you say?
Yes, it's not directly one, but I do work with people that deal every day with cybersecurity. So on our OT side, we normally wouldn't think about cybersecurity when it comes to the OT side of Industry 4.0 and all the technology. But dealing with the IT, Magna has a very strong policy when it comes to cybersecurity. And we have guidelines and also training that are always being upgraded. from time to time, and is taken in a very precise and important position before we think about any new software or any new methodology of technology. We have to discuss the cybersecurity side of it. So, for example, we do have cloud services, but we rather have our own cloud-based server to run anything than having our data being run by a third-party company. So I would say that cloud services are great for small companies because they make things more accessible, not only to not having the necessity of having people on-site able with the skills to deal with all the technology, but also it will reduce costs. But when it comes to big companies like Magna that have the people with the skills that can be working on it, we will still be using cloud, but in a different, I would say that even with our own Industry 4.0 process, we partner with other companies, but we bring them inside to work with us. Yeah. So it makes a bit more sense for us when it comes to security. But security is definitely one of the main things we think whenever we develop anything.
Yeah, makes sense. And a large organization, a large multinational organization like yours, of course, this has been on the forefront for a while, and you have that expertise in-house. Cybersecurity insurance is something that, you know, we're, Ali's not here, but it, the reason we started doing cybersecurity discussions at Automation Ladies, we do it during, I think it is October, that is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And this, I think we've done it 2 years in a row now, and we're going to do it as an annual thing, but is to cybersecurity awareness is really important for people that are not even touching any OT, IT networks, that are not in technical roles, that are not talking about it every day. As big companies will have whole, you know, usually a cybersecurity officer and a whole organization that exists under them that is involved with IT and OT at this point as well, I'm sure. But there's, you know, cybersecurity touches everyone, whether we know it or not. And I think with the prominence of phishing and just, I mean, it is attacking us all over the place in our private lives as well. So I think it's really important for everyone to know both the implications of cyber threats to yourself, to your family, to your employer, and, you know, your industry at large is something that all of us need to be worried about, whether or not, you know, it actually touches our job. But certainly we need to have vendors that we can rely on and make sure that they're also thinking about that. I've been surprised still here in the US, and this is probably again on the smaller business side, but that not all systems integrators or even OEMs are touching on cybersecurity in their contracts, their plans, their, you know, requests for proposals and things like that. Obviously, when we do government work, it's now very important. It is required. You have to have cybersecurity insurance. You have to have a plan, all of those sorts of things. But we need it in the long tail too with the small businesses. So I will just keep saying it. I'll keep saying it over and over every time I can. If you don't think about cybersecurity, at least on a weekly basis, it doesn't matter who you are. Start. Start somewhere. Start thinking about it, because we can spend all the money in the world on cybersecurity, but one person can still screw it up. And this is not a panel on cybersecurity specifically, so I won't, you know, start bringing up all the examples.
That's true. But
humans are still our weakest link and our biggest strengths. Right. And we can't do this right without them. Victoria, are you guys having any challenges hiring people for your plant, like on the plant floor level, or any particular areas or positions that you guys have noticed? Or is that, you know, you got a good healthy pipeline over there in the UK?
Definitely. No, it's been a challenging to find skilled people on the field available to be hired or even willing to move from wherever they are into us. I would say that when it comes just to Ireland, we are a small island, and the youth here normally likes to go out, like to the US, Australia, New Zealand, to explore the youthness there and also to study and everything. So it leaves the country with a short line of people available for work. So yes, we are struggling to all kinds of skills, not only from the maintenance side, which I'm struggling every day, but I can see also people in other departments, they are also struggling to the point that, as you see, I'm Brazilian, I'm working there, I'm not Irish. They had to recruit me all the way from Brazil.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's a big part of your story. That the most, I was already the here, most but impressive part is that you weren't you know, brought to Ireland by a company or sponsored or anything like that. You did it yourself. Which is just, I encourage everyone to listen to Victoria's episode because, as an immigrant myself to the U.S., I didn't, do that on my own. It was my dad, and I was brought here as a child. But just knowing how difficult it was for us as a family and how long of a process that was, I mean, I didn't have a work visa when I first moved here. So I couldn't get, a job bagging groceries down the street like my friends, in middle high school did. And knowing the amount of money and time that we spent on that process was huge. But now we live in this interconnected world, right? We have companies that have plants all over the place. We get messages all the time from people in different countries that want, to come to the U.S., to, work in automation. Looking at this report as well, it is from all over the the world. Andy, are there any particular trends that you see geographically in terms of where more manufacturing, more smart manufacturing is happening versus elsewhere?
Yeah, I would say not particularly. I think the world, as your point earlier, is global in nature. Things that, equipment bought in one region is moved to another and used in production. There's a lot happening. And so it is across the globe, all of these trends are happening. We're not seeing laggards in regions overall like in the past. And that's why in this year's report, we spent a lot of time to try to balance that global perspective, right? To broaden that out and get a good base from, different companies of different sizes, different regions of the globe, and really focused around the decision makers in these organizations. If you look at the distribution of the respondents, it's very heavily skewed towards those that are key decision makers or co-decision makers in the process, because we things are moving fast. We want to understand the decisions that are happening by those who make them, not the those that are speculating on decisions down the road. And getting that with good information in timely manner, as fast as things are happening, seems to be common across the globe, from different points in Asia Pacific region to Latin America to the States.
Yeah, technology has no boundaries. I used to, as an example, I used to use Rocco technology back in Brazil when I was working for the tire company, and I'm still doing this here now in Ireland. Basically, you change the machines, but at the background, technology is still the same.
Except for NPT and M4 threads and things like that. Why can't we standardize on these things, people? But otherwise, yes, I see, a lot of the technology is the same. Oh, we've got, okay, let me bring in, we've got Juan. He is famous now. You're on TV, Juan. Thanks for joining and having insights. We appreciate it. He says, when Tesla faced staffing shortages and struggled to fill positions, they initiated vertical integration of education and training. Upskilling their existing workforce proved crucial to their success, and others should follow suit. That is a very good point. Is that something that at Magna you guys are, working on outside of just trying to recruit new people? Are you actively, do you have plans for upskilling and things like that?
Yes, we do. We have internal upskilling programs where we move people even from countries to learn from other people with experience even. So yes, there is a strong system for training in Magna to the point that people are even moving careers sometimes. And in Brazil, what I have seen also companies doing is partnering with educational institutions to train the workforce in the community so you can have skilled people in that area available to be hired.
Yeah, yeah. And I know education, is so important. I wish that we had more emphasis on manufacturing technologies in education, but you have a mechatronics degree, and that is still not too common, at least here in the U.S. with four-year
Unfortunately
colleges.
Not.
Is it still, do you see those programs more now, or is it still pretty hard to find?
Unfortunately not. I don't see, people still don't know what is mechatronic. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I don't even say like, oh, I'm a mechatronic engineer. I say like, oh, I work with automation. I work with integration, because it's easier for people to associate. But mechatronic goes way beyond than just automation. We work with systems. We work with technology. We work with robotics. So it's way more. It's a very complex and wide course. And it would be my dream for people to know it better and maybe have more courses available everywhere. Because I would say that the future of industry is basically mechatronics.
Yeah. Everything connects.
My opinion.
I would say I agree with you. Andy, is education something that, you know, you hear about or touch on or hear from your customers that they're putting some emphasis on? Or
yeah, it's absolutely needed. I think enablement of resources, you know, upskilling is top of mind. As we talked about, it's one of the biggest challenges they face, right? Getting the right skilled workers. And, you know, one of the things we've learned pretty heavily at Rockwell Automation is you couple, you know, lesser people and, you know, available to do that. We have to make sure we have effective ways to train and upskill. And one of the learnings is it's about continuous enablement. You know, it isn't just you go to a 1 week long training class once a year or every 2 years. Technology is changing too fast. Things are evolving so quickly that you have to have part of that change management with people is continuous enablement, right? Humanizing that learning, finding ways to incorporate it into the things they do and continuously update as things are changing. You know, what you learned a year ago may be completely different or not applicable now. So you always have to keep that continuously going. And for us at Rockwell Automation, it is a key focus. How do we get new technologies into the universities and trade schools globally, right? To train the next workforce that's coming into the market. How do we, you know, with STEM programs and introducing, you know, manufacturing and technology to high school and, you know, middle school students to get them excited about that industry and the cool technology and things that you can do when you get into that space. And then things around our Academy of Advanced Manufacturing, where we're training veterans, we're training, you know, people coming back into the workforce to take on some of these high-skilled jobs in manufacturing. So it's a multifaceted approach to help manufacturers get the right skills that they need. You know, Victoria, to help you have access to the right skills that you need to hire in your company to be successful. We take pride in that, and that's something we know is part of our responsibility to help do that globally.
Yeah, Scott Chapman chimes in. Mechatronics has been around the U.S. for at least a decade. You're absolutely right. It's not new. It just hasn't proliferated as fast or as much yes. as I would have really liked to see in the last 10 years. I was also I was around 10 years ago. We were talking about mechatronics. I worked at Festo, and Festo is one of the, they have a great arm of their company called Festo Didactic, which makes learning systems. They are very heavily focused on learning systems for mechatronics programs because they touch...
I use it.
Did you learn on one of those systems?
Yes, I did.
Oh, in college. Shout out to our friends, Mike Nager, and there's a couple other people, Ted Rozier being another one, that are really active out there in the education space, outside of just, you know, Festo and Festo Didactic, but, you know, writing books for kids and all kinds of things like that. But I've been surprised that, you know, it's been 10 years and you still say mechatronics and most people have no idea what you're talking about.
Yes.
So I don't know why we haven't been able to do it faster.
What I noticed in Brazil, at least, is that they migrated a little bit the course. They changed the course and they divided it. So, for example, if you go to the more technological training, they still call it mechatronics. Mm-hmm. For the technical part, but when it comes to third degree, they have divided it. So they will have like automation course. They won't call it mechatronics anymore.
Okay.
Very little case, they will still keep the name.
Gotcha. Scott, he says, I thought it was popular because those are the people I talk to. I don't know any doctors or lawyers. I mean, that is also such, it's so fascinating. Each of us lives in a little, in our own little world, right? And I think some people, you know, like us, I don't spend much time on other social media, TikTok or Instagram or anywhere else, because I happen to be one of those geeks that just, I love my work so much that I also am friends with people in my industry. I like to talk about that stuff. In fact, I seek out friends in my industry because my regular friends don't want to hear about it.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. So like, yeah, you're right. Like, am I hanging out with a bunch of doctors and lawyers trying to tell them about mechatronics? No, because the first time I say that, their eyes glaze over and it's like, okay, yeah, I'll go talk to my people about it. But we need everyone to know. And I, for one, am really optimistic that, you know, or it's unfortunate that we've had a lot of layoffs and things like that in the software world, in what we would call, you know, the tech industry, like Google and Facebook and these companies that have really dominated what we call tech in the last decade and have taken a lot of, you know, new grads away from other industries because it is a very attractive industry. It's at the forefront of technology. It's with companies that have, you know, all of these great benefits and cool campuses. And it has been like the new wave of what's cool to do. But we've kind of saturated that a little bit. And unfortunately, these companies have made all kinds of cuts and changes and layoffs. And I think a lot of the, you know, new shiny has worn off of that type of tech industry. And now with the two marrying, right, we talk about manufacturing. And now that we're talking about smart manufacturing, manufacturing is indeed cool. Again, I really hope, and this is just my personal view based on having talked to a lot of people over the last couple of years on the show and, you know, in the field with our customers, with our suppliers, that physically making things is going to be cool again. What I have seen, though, and it's a struggle, right, is these manufacturing companies, just the trade-offs and differences in, for instance, the expectation for pay, the expectation for using technology. I think we need to update a little bit maybe what we think these jobs are and how we present them to the world. Because I do see, you know, in the general population, manufacturing is one of the least interesting careers for people. And I think just part of me thinks that it's because they don't know how cool it is, because it's not being shown.
Exactly.
And for that, I thank Tesla for whoever they let in to do like drone footage of their plants. And I think automotive has been one, like if you look up robot manufacturing stuff on YouTube, you can see a lot of cool automotive plants. But a lot of our other industries are kind of closed off. Andy, you have a lot more, experience, right, working in these industries. Do you know, is it just people manufacturing processes, they're so IP heavy that they just are always, everything is always under NDA and nobody can take any pictures? We're not showing the outside world how cool the manufacturing industry is. Do you have some insight into why that is?
And secrecy and IP is always in large companies, you know, top of mind for sure. That's always a barrier, right? In anything. If you've done integration work, I'm sure anyone who's been into a plant on a new process, you've signed NDAs or you've been in that part of the plant that has, you know, plastic around the equipment and only certain people are allowed inside to see it before it comes out. So that's always the case, right? And being able to tap into that and find ways to, you know, showcase how cool it can be has not historically been something that happens. It takes the Tesla or others that are more open to go do that, right? To show that to the world. You know, the other thing you mentioned earlier is not necessarily covered in the Smart Manufacturing Report, but we do see a trend with skill set of availability of like software developers. We're seeing that skill set now come into automation because they can apply that modern software development practice to automation. And there's a cool factor there about, you know, programming things and controlling physical things, actually see things being made and that's there. So a key trend we see is how do you harness modern software development practices in manufacturing, in automation design environments, in the software tools that you know, technology group wants to use. Historically, that's lagged behind, right? Automation development has not been typically the most modern of software practices, and that is changing fast. Tool developers are expecting that modern software development in those environments, and that opens up two new sets of talent for the industry and for the market. And we have to keep promoting how cool manufacturing really can be to get those talents into that space.
True.
Yeah, can't we just like stick a ping pong table in the break room at every manufacturer and start like showing videos of that?
If you robot can't playing see ping pong. That's what we do, right? Show the robot ping pong player.
Yeah, there we go. Oh gosh, I saw another video today. I think it was Aaron Prather that posted, but from Thailand, of a robot crushing a worker. And thankfully, the headline did not say robot attacks worker. It was at least more straightforward, but it was a complete, I mean, very clear to anybody, I think, from North America or the UK or Ireland, you know, you don't even have to watch the video to realize right off the bat that that robot needed to be in a cage. It needed lockout, tag out. I know that probably has anything to do with the report, but it's something near and dear to my heart. As we increase the use of automation, then obviously automation-related accidents will increase. And that's just, you know, I saw that as kind of a scary headline at one point. As we implement more robots, more injuries will happen. And it's like, well, yeah, more robot-related injuries, not necessarily more injuries on the whole, because all kinds of other old-school manufacturing processes also have a lot of issues and injuries, and robots are in fact taking some of those jobs that are dangerous to people. But it's really about how we as people design these systems, right? If we don't do a safety study ahead of time and we don't properly have a safety culture that not only we design our systems and processes to be safe, but then we train our people to think about safety, how, you know, that's just, I kind of like cyber, I guess. Safety culture is something that is so important as we increase the amount of technology in our plants. Is that also top of mind? Was that covered at all in the report, Andy?
It was, actually. There was a section about emerging technologies and, you know, manufacturers, because of the shortage of labor, the advances in technology, the expectations around cobots, autonomous mobile robots, you know, being part of the task, right? The idea of a robot that's in a cage, you know, safety top of mind, but there's a lot of tasks where people interact, right? And being able to apply AMRs that are running around plants delivering goods to production amid people. And the manufacturers expect technology and AI to produce a safe environment, to react to what could be erratic human behavior, you know, and moving around. And technology needs to understand that's real. And those solutions have to take safety in mind. AMRs, autonomous mobile robots, and cobots, we're going to see so many more of those coming into manufacturing every day, not just in logistics and warehousing, but in traditional manufacturing spaces. That's a huge part of what manufacturers expect. And that was indeed part of a trend we see growing in report this year.
Victoria, do you have, is this a safety something that is, I'm sure, at the top of
your mind? Yes. While he was saying, I was only thinking, first thing that we always have to do whenever we install a robot or any automate system is to do the risk assessment.
Yeah.
We need to risk assess the situation, because you cannot, of course, prevent 100% of the case, but you can reduce at least 90% of the risk if you analyze what kind of risk you are going to face once you have a new robot installed or any cobot running around the factory. When I saw a video of the auto, the first thing I thought was, what kind of risks it would bring to us based on the normal behavior of our workforce.
Yeah.
So this is something that the people working health and safety in each facility has also to take part in. So because sometimes we forget to involve other people in projects. I'm selling a new robot, so I only need maintenance engineering. No, you need a few more people involved to cover other facts that will be taken in production, quality, even in health and safety. So it's important to remember that health and safety is important too.
Yeah, and although we're all developing technologies that are as safe as possible right out of the gate, it's all about how they're applied. And applied correctly. So that risk assessment for your particular situation is really important. So in that video I mentioned earlier, somebody was basically treating a very large industrial robot like a cobot.
Mm-hmm.
Like that person was going in there. They should not have been even close to it. It was clearly not a robot that had any kind of force feedback, right? And then the same, I saw again today as well a video of the Tesla Cybertruck. The trunk closing, apparently there's a test that somebody did putting a cucumber and a carrot in between the trunk as it closed. And the Cybertruck just straight up chopped the carrot. And then there was like, they tested a Hyundai and a BMW, and a few of them kind of crushed the carrot a little bit. So you would get injured, but probably not your fingers chopped off. But in the Tesla Cybertruck, it does look like if you stick your hand in while the trunk is closing, you are losing some fingers. So safety is important from the product design perspective, the use case perspective, the training perspective, all of that. And I'm really glad that, of course, that's something that, you know, is on everybody's mind. But just like cybersecurity, I think we sometimes underestimate how many people need to be involved, which is really everyone. Scott chimes in and said, there's a red Cybertruck for sale in Houston. All right. I think I am not interested in one until they fix that problem. I've gotten my hand caught in the door of a car before. My mom has gotten the car door slammed on her finger in the past, my son. So I know that this is something that you cannot train humans not to slam doors on themselves. So you need to have some sort of safety precautions there. And to make another point, so cybersecurity, huge, huge demand. If you're going to train yourself on something, get extra certifications in something, get, you know, you're looking at what kind of career can be stable, lucrative. Honestly, anything within industrial automation, I would say, but functional safety and cybersecurity are two other huge add-ons that will make you very attractive. We had a very, very cool episode live with Linda Freeman from Rockwell Automation recently, and she made a point to say as well how there is a lack of people certified with functional safety. So if these things are something that you can, you know, that you really care about, that touch your heart, there's a lucrative career in it for you too, if you help people that maybe don't have that expertise. So with that, it looks like we're right about up on time. I really appreciated this conversation. I'm sorry, as a moderator, I talk a little too much. It's just one of my things. I love to chime in. Andy or Victoria, is there anything that you guys want to make sure that we touch on or get out to the audience before we sign off today?
Yeah, thank you for having me on the episode today. Love discussing manufacturing. It's exciting for me, and I agree with you. How do we make it manufacturing more exciting for people coming in to fill that talent gap? And I would encourage everybody to download a copy of the Smart Manufacturing Report. It's no charge. You can grab that from the Rockwell Automation website. Great insight to what you may be experiencing, you know, in your companies, data points to help push through for funding initiatives on things that can help you across your organization. So enjoy the time with you today.
Yeah, thank you. And our new marketing strategist, Emily Merritt, just helped me and Allie condense. She asked us what our mission is. And I think we kind of came down to uniting unique perspectives in automation as one of the things that, you know, if we think about everything that Automation Ladies wants to do, that kind of condenses it down. And I hope that all of you here will kind of look at that and say, okay, how can you get to know more unique perspectives, people in your space, collaborate together, network with each other. If you want to reach out to any one of us for help with projects, you know, career discussions, I think everybody here is pretty open to that. You can find us all on LinkedIn. You can reach out. Like I said, there's a link to download the report in the comments. And we will have some more material coming out on this topic on Automation Ladies. And then I also want to, I'm going to try to do this on every episode now, because Linda, just, I don't know how I didn't think of it before, but I would encourage everybody here, if you see in the networking tab of the event, so even if you didn't watch this live, you can go to the networking tab and see who else attended this event. Send them a connection request and say, hey, we both were interested in the, you know, the smart manufacturing panel, because having a network of other people in your industry, maybe with different skill sets or in a slightly different position, it has proved to be a huge value to me and my company and the companies that I work with over the last couple of years. And, you know, we are a global world now. A lot of us, I don't think that industrial automation and manufacturing has another platform that is as rich with people interested in working together on this stuff than LinkedIn does. So I would encourage you to use the opportunity, if you attended this event, to connect with other like-minded people that are also here. And if you ever need help, guidance, information, inspiration, reach out to either one of us that was on the panel or somebody that you found here in the comments. And then we do have a YouTube channel. We have a newsletter. We're trying to, you know, kind of get more content out in more ways. So please do try to, I guess, like and subscribe, as people say, whether you're watching this on YouTube or on LinkedIn. I thank you so much for joining us on a Thursday afternoon, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. And to those that celebrate or observe, I know it's especially big in Europe. This is kind of spring break coming up. It's happy Easter, everyone. And have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks,
bye.
Thank you, guys.